Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Today we're talking about jury duty. It's as fundamental an obligation as voting in the United States, but apparently much less popular. For those who have never served on a jury, for perhaps you envision a scene from the film 12 Angry Men.
I don't really know what the truth is. I don't suppose anybody will ever really know. Nine of us now seem to feel that the defendant is innocent. But we're just gambling on probabilities. We may be wrong. We may be trying to let a guilty man go free. I don't know. Nobody really can. But we have a reasonable doubt. And that's something that's very valuable in our system. No jury can declare a man guilty unless it's sure.
That, of course, is Henry Fonda playing juror number 8 in the iconic story of Truth, Justice, and Judgment. The realities, however, often are less dramatic. And although some of the 12 Angry Men jurors found the job tedious, in reality, jury duty often lasts much longer than a few days. And that's not even a guarantee that you'll actually get on a jury. So what's so important about jury duty and why is it called a duty? Joining us today by phone from Washington, D.C. to talk about that is law professor, former public defender, and author of a new book on the topic, Andrew Guthrie Ferguson. The name of the book is called Why Jury Duty Matters. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
I have a question for our listeners first. Have you ever been called to jury duty and tried to get out of it? Give us a call and tell us why. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, Andrew, what do we know, first of all, about the incidence of Americans who try to get out of jury duty?
I think from my experience of trying cases for 9 years in the Superior Court in Washington, D.C., and from anecdotal evidence all over the country, many citizens, because of either anxiousness, because of beliefs, or because of the inconvenience of it, do try to get out of what was one of the two pillars, political rights, that started and founded this country of voting and jury duty. And it is both understandable, but also perhaps a bit regrettable that jurors don't see the real value in service, and not just the value to the court system, but also the value to themselves.
Well, has it always been that way?
You know, it has in some way. If you trace through the history of the jury, even back in the founding, certainly landed gentry figured out ways to try to bribe their way out. And the penalties for skipping jury service date back almost to the day of recording in American history, where people were fined in pounds of tobacco for skipping out. At the same time, the image of the juror, both at the time of the founding, but also if you trace it through the Reconstruction Amendments and then the suffrage movement, really connected jury duty, jury service, and our political constitutional identity in a way that I think we've lost today.
My guest is Andrew Guthrie Ferguson. He's a law professor at the University of the District of Columbia and the author of Why Jury Duty Matters. Have you ever tried to get out of jury duty? Give us a call and tell us why. 614-292-8513. You can also go to our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. I read somewhere that the current disillusionment with jury duty has something to do with the O.J. Simpson case from 20-odd years ago and the length of that service jury duty. Is there anything we can peg it to in that way?
I think there are several reasons. Certainly, there are high-profile cases that have brought some criticism. I mean, you can even look at the Casey Anthony trial, a little more recent in time, that have brought some critiques of jurors and their decisions. At the same time, though, I think that those bad experiences or perhaps critical experiences are completely overstated. I practiced again for 9 years, and every single day I'd walk in to the Superior Court and I'd see this group of jurors who had all the normal emotions of anxiousness, frustration, maybe boredom. And then I'd get to talk to them after their service. And I would see that jury duty and jury service had been transformative. People had solved a very difficult problem. People had connected across a community with community members they never otherwise would have met. And they were asked to do something fundamentally American, which was solve a really hard problem as part of a larger political governmental entity. They were sort of serving the great values and roles of being a juror, and they were doing exactly what the founders and others thought they could do, and they were doing it again. And I think that those stories, unfortunately, aren't told that often, and they're happening right now as we speak in Ohio and across the nation. There are people doing the real hard work of solving difficult problems in jury rooms.
Is the process of jury duty, the experience of jury duty in general, because it's not always sitting on a jury, sometimes it's just sitting in a room waiting to be called to a jury, is it pretty much the same across the United States, or does it differ a lot between the states?
Well, or it between, does differ.
Yeah.
You know, one of the realities is that, you know, different 50 different states, the federal system and then municipal systems each have a slightly different or sometimes radically different way of bringing jurors in, how long they have to serve. Some states have decided on one day, one trial systems. But by and large, they share the same experience where they come in. They are put in usually a large waiting room. There's some orientation. And then they're picked or not picked to come through the voir dire process to decide who could be there. And one of the reasons I wrote the book was I wanted to take even that experience. To me, if you picture the bane of the citizen's life on jury duty is that waiting room, right?
Yeah.
But in that waiting room is actually one of the more remarkable spaces in many municipalities. In D.C., it's perhaps the most diverse room you could be in the city, where you have people from all walks of life who are there to share their stories, who may well be bonded on a particular task, who all are equal. You can have senators sitting next to, you know, slackers who've never, you know, graduated anything, who will be asked and tasked to do the exact same job. And they're all there not because of who they are or what they did or any sort of identity outside of it. They're there because they're citizens. And it's that role as citizen that I think we sort of forget when we look at the importance of the jury.
Are you confident that there is that much diversity anymore, particularly when we look at income levels, with the increase in part-time jobs where people are working two and three jobs, the proliferation of that? Are we getting those people on our juries? Is there a balance? Is there some kind of great balance there or not?
You know, there may be more of a concern that, almost everyone is qualified to be summoned, whether people who have financial hardships or who have moved around a lot, maybe they've lost their houses, they may not be in the system the same way. In general, the only people who are excluded are felons or people who are either of the wrong, you know, who are not citizens or who aren't of the right age. But generally, everyone is brought in, and then, of course, the realities of part-time jobs and hardships are there. And I think that those are legitimate criticisms and legitimate complaints for people who say, I financially can't do this work. But at the same time, there are lots of people who just don't. The reason I wrote this book was to get people to rethink their approach to jury service, to say, you know, I'm not doing this for the court system necessarily, although that's obviously important. I'm doing it for me, and that jury duty can be personally meaningful. I can learn something about the Constitution. I can learn something about constitutional values, and I can see why we have had this system since, you know, before America was America.
You mentioned that felons are not allowed to be on a jury. Is it a problem that people with a criminal record can't serve on a jury? The U.S. has the highest incarceration rate in the world. According to the U.S. Bureau of Justice Statistics, and I think this is for 2009, non-Hispanic blacks accounted for 39.4% of the total prison and jail population. And the 2010 census, blacks composed 13.6% of the U.S. population. I mean, that's a big disconnect when you look at our criminal justice system, isn't it?
I completely agree, and I think that the reality is not only are people who have, you know, who are convicted felons prevented, but they're also, in many states, not all states, they're never allowed to serve. And one of the things about citizenship that I think we forget, and one of the things I think about citizenship and jury duty we forget, is that part of the reason why it mattered to be a politically active citizen was so that you would invest in your community. You'd invest in those systems. And so if you have already excluded someone who's a felon, and then you give them no way back to invest again, perhaps the one party might strike them when they are called for other reasons, or they could express some bias or some concern about the system. But my personal belief is that they should at least be summoned once they've served their time and they're off the oversight of the criminal justice system, because otherwise you are going to skew things based on demographics, class demographics, and race demographics.
We have a tweet from V.A. Seckler, who says, tapped for grand jury pool in 1980s CBS murders trial. I asked to be excused due to the duties as a newspaper journalist. I would like to add to that, Andrew, that I was tapped for jury duty, too. And because I was a journalist, that I couldn't get on the panel. I wanted to be on.
Right.
I wanted to serve.
In Washington, certainly, there's no exclusion. I've certainly had journalists on the panel and considered whether I wanted to have my jury trial, talked about later when journalists reflect on their jury service, as many of them do. But it's not necessarily an exclusion in all states or all municipalities. Sometimes, of course, the parties would rather not have a public figure on their jury, either because it's a distraction or because they are worried about how it'll get written up later
on. But that's a different issue. There's one thing about trying to get out of jury duty, and there's another thing being kept off a jury because of your job, because of whatever you do. We have an email from Ricky says, I wish I could serve on a jury. I've been called 2 times, and every time they hear I teach in a prison, I am dismissed. I just sit in the waiting room for an entire week. I can relate to Rick.
I think that there is a concern. I mean, the move for many states is to limit exclusions. Like they used to be, there are many more exemptions on the books. If you were a doctor, a lawyer, you're automatically exempt. And many states have realized that that's not only unfair, but unnecessary, and that if there's a particular problem, someone could bring that up. But there shouldn't be these categorical exclusions from jury service, because it is a leveling process where everyone walks in. If you believe in one person, one vote, and believe in the principle of democracy, it really takes place in that jury room, right? There are 12 people or 8 people, if you're a civil case, 12 people looking across the table, and it doesn't matter what you did before. It doesn't matter where you came from. What matters is your role as citizen right at that moment.
Matt in Columbus, you're on the air. You say that you probably will try to get out in the future?
Well, I may bring it up. In my life, I've been called to jury service 3 separate times, probably because I once worked for the state and I live in the same house for a long time, and I vote. But my first tour, I was on several trials, and the second one on one, and the third time they kept asking, have you ever sat on a jury and did you come to a decision? And it seemed to me that everybody in the jury room who had answered that question yes got eliminated. So perhaps your guest can comment, as a trial lawyer, whether he eliminates people who have come to decisions. And if that's true, am I not taking up the space in the jury room from somebody who is more likely to be picked?
That can be very disheartening, Andrew.
No, and I fully understand. I don't think necessarily it has to do with the fact that you've served in the past, although perhaps some systems are concerned about how that deliberation process went. Usually there's a follow-up question about, had you come to a decision, and was there anything about that decision that troubled you or caused you trouble? But it doesn't sound like that happened. And I think that we miss an opportunity to have experienced jurors come back. Obviously, it's a different case, it's different people, it's probably a different judge, maybe a different courthouse. But the experience of having gone through jury service can be incredibly valuable, and it can give other jurors who don't have the same orientation, don't have the same understanding of what will happen, tremendous guidance in a way. So I think it's a missed opportunity for lawyers not to have experienced jurors. I mean, I've had jurors who've sat in several different cases, all sorts of different cases, civil and criminal, and I think it's useful to have jurors with experience on one's jury.
Thank you, Matt, for that call. My guest is Andrew Guthrie Ferguson. He is the author of a new book. It's called Why Jury Duty Matters. Coming up, we'll hear from the jury commissioner for the Franklin County Municipal Court. From our listeners, I'd like to know, have you tried to get out of jury duty before? Not have you been eliminated from a jury pool, but have you tried to get out of it and succeeded or not? What did you do to try to get off jury duty? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, a drug prescribed for ADHD is all over college campuses now. We'll look at the use and abuse of Adderall. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point is this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. Some clouds today, along with some sunshine, a high right around 31 degrees. Partly cloudy for tonight and a low of 20. And then expect some sunshine, a little warmer on Thursday with a high of 43. Rain moving in Thursday night, a low of 34 degrees. Some rain mixing with snow for Friday, a high of 37. Support comes from the Columbus Jazz Orchestra, performing with the Columbus Youth Jazz Orchestra in Ragtime Blues and Beyond, A Short History of Jazz, with guest saxophonist Tia Fuller and drummer Lewis Nash, showcasing over 100 years of jazz, February 7th through the 10th at the Southern Theater. Details at jazzartsgroup.org. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. The right to a trial by jury is part of the foundation of the criminal justice system in the United States, but too often Americans aren't interested in serving. Even citizens who proudly vote, who serve on their PTA, invest in philanthropy, and work hard to rear law-abiding and patriotic children, try to get out of jury duty. So what gives? And does it really matter? Still with us by phone from Washington, D.C. to talk about that is law professor, former public defender, and author Andrew Guthrie Ferguson. He wrote a new book. It's called Why Jury Duty Matters. Once again, Andrew, thanks for joining us.
Of course.
And joining us now is Thomas Shields. He's jury commissioner for the Franklin County Municipal Court. Thomas also serves as a member of the Ohio Judicial Conference's Jury Service Committee and as a founding trustee for the Ohio Jury Management Association. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Good morning. Thanks for having me in.
Once again, we're looking for folks who tried to get out of jury duty, not someone who got eliminated from a jury, eliminated in the voir dire process, but who tried to get out of showing up for that 2 weeks of sitting around on jury duty. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Tom Shields, you started in the court business in 1980 when you got the job as a bailiff in the Franklin County Municipal Court, and five years later, you moved into your present job.
Right.
33 years ago, what struck you most about how the system wasn't working?
It didn't seem to be accommodating enough to help. You know, I've been listening in some of the statements you made about people not being able to come in because of this, 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 or this. The court has to be somewhat accommodating to handle those schedules. So in turn, what I thought we could start doing was flexing the program from the inside, and I can go into that in some detail if you like.
But yeah, we would like to hear about that. Let's hear first from somebody who got out of jury duty. Ula in Delaware, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi. Was the fact that you're a college professor a reason why you didn't even have to show up for jury duty?
No, I had to show up, and I said, look, this class meets only twice a week. And I feel we're missing too much. It was an upper-level seminar. And I said, I feel I will miss too much, even if the case only lasts 2 or 3 days.
Did you want to serve, or did
you? Oh, I've served several times.
Okay, so you aren't opposed to jury duty in and of itself.
No, no, but okay. I definitely said I don't want to do this. And then there was another time when I was called to grand jury in Columbus, and it was going to be 3 weeks. And I said, no, no, I will not, I will not. I will make up any story you want, because I can't drive back and forth from Delaware to Columbus every day.
Tom Shields, you're shaking your head right now. Is that pretty common? It's just that length of time for some people? They just can't put aside that much time?
Well, it can be. And obviously, there are different terms of the grand jury. But what you need to do is make contact with the court and find out if they can postpone your reporting date. We do that for a large percentage of the people that I summons over a year's time. Works out great.
Yeah, tell us how you do accommodate people's schedules, because they're more complicated than ever these days.
Well, the program was a mandatory 2 weeks for a number of years. In 2004, we took it over to a mixed program, which means that the vast majority of the crew still come in and serve for 2 weeks, but they may come in the morning session. They may only come in the afternoon session. So in essence, their day could be 1:30 until 3 o'clock in the afternoon if there are no trials started. And in the municipal court, I think what people need to understand, we're looking at 80 to 120 possible jury trials every day. So it's not something where you're just sitting there burning time. You know, the idea behind this was not necessarily to provide peerage or a jury of peers, but a sampling of all cognizable groups that reside in the jurisdiction. It makes everybody unique. And you know, we all know that process, that ideal. So the court has just as much of a responsibility to work around those schedules as people do to try to give us the information we need to accommodate that. So, you know, we can change a person's reporting date 3, 4, 5 months out. They can pick and choose. I don't know any reason that other courts in Ohio could not do the same, and I know a number of them do in the larger jurisdictions.
Andrew Guthrie Ferguson, are you finding that more and more courts across the country are starting to make those kind of accommodations and not be so rigid in what their expectations are in terms of time and so forth?
They are. In fact, over the last, you know, probably 2 decades, you've seen a move towards sort of one day, one trial systems, which means you'd be summoned for 1 day or one trial, which might mean that you'd get the summons more often, but that your service would be limited. Of course, the trial could last a couple days, but you may, if you went in there for your day and were not picked, you might have another couple years before you got the summons in the mail. And there are many states have adopted that. Even I think some jurisdictions in Ohio have adopted a slightly fewer days, like maybe it's a 2-day one trial system or a 3-day one trial system. And that is also to address the inconvenience. Most of us in our daily lives have certain things that are planned, but there are also times in our lives where we could fit in this important civic moment and this important constitutional duty. And the hope is that if you craft a flexible process, you'll be able to encourage more people to have the opportunity to participate.
Tom Shields, is it always clear to people when they get that summons that, yeah, this, you have to show up? This is the law.
Yes.
People always get that.
Yes. Problem that you have, sometimes people don't take the time to read it.
Okay.
So, you know, you get these phone calls. Well, I got this summons. Is it for 1 day or what? So, yeah, we do have a lot of explanation over the phone on the website, you know, any way we possibly can.
Georgia. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. One of the interesting things, if you think about the difference between jury service and voting, we just spent about $2 billion on the presidential elections to get a little over half of Americans to vote. I would imagine that there's maybe a few PSA commercials about jury duty, if that. We don't spend that much time educating citizens about jury service, and it may be something to encourage jury yields, the number of people who show up, and make people want to rethink their sort of, you know, their anxiousness about coming. We may want to invest in more time and energy and education about why this matters.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Tom Shields?
One thing, I want to step back for just a moment. The one-day, one-trial system has been mentioned numerous times, and I actually worked with the individual that developed that. His name was Tom Munsterman. He's retired. He worked for the Center for Jury Studies for the National Center. One of the issues with one-day, one-trial, and the reason that we do not run a one-day, one-trial program is because in a number of states that implemented that idea, the exemptions, the reason to be excused, were removed, such as loss of income. So even though you get a summons that indicates your one day or the length of one trial, if you go to the LA Superior Court website, you'll see that the average length of trial is 5 to 7 days, which means that your income basically could be lost for that period of time. Now, we're willing to accommodate people based on a 4-day term, but not after one trial. So basically, they can serve on multiple cases. Ohio statutes are a little bit different than some of the states that are running one-day, one-trial systems, and that has to be brought in, it has to be thought about, and it has to be given consideration.
Georgia in Columbus, you're on the air. You got out of jury duty, right?
Yeah, right. I'm self-employed, and there's a direct relationship between the production I do and the deliveries I make and the sales I make and whether or not I eat.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So there really wasn't any choice. I would be happy to do it, and I do think it's an important civic responsibility, but I just could not figure out any way that I could.
Time shield, is that pretty common nowadays, particularly with the economy the way it is, more self-employed people?
Yes, absolutely. And if there's any potential loss of income under the revised code, you can be excused from duty. The last group that I brought in this past Monday, I addressed the group with that issue, and we had 4 people that indicated that they would follow up with a letter. It would be verified, but they were losing income. The courts do not wish to put anybody in a circumstance to lose income.
Except that, and with George's point duly noted about food on the table, the pool is missing then that element, that self-employed person that has to put food on the table. What about that?
Well, we have people that are self-employed in our pools most of the time.
Okay.
Now, there may only be one or two. The idea of the demographics, the samplings, I keep a very close eye on that. Our representation to census data out of Franklin County is just excellent. There could not be a successful challenge in the array filed to the array in our court. So, and that is bottom line. So when you talk about self-employed, race, ethnicity, income, age, across the board, we do those comparisons at least once a quarter to make sure that we're in line, and we are well within line.
Thank you, Georgia, for that call. We appreciate it. Andrew Ferguson, in general, to what extent are employers to blame for the disinterest in jury duty?
Well, you know, I don't think you can blame employers. I think everyone has their own, you know, self-interest. And obviously, when an employee is not there, it burdens other employees and it burdens the employers. Some employers are wonderfully supportive in that they'll continue to pay. Many government agencies do that. And many companies, when confronted, recognize that this is part of the American system and something that they, if they support the American system, also support. Obviously, that's maybe the line given rather than the realities of telling your boss, I'm sorry, I can't come in because I have my jury summons, and there may be some resentment, there may be some difficulty. But, you know, I think that these are just the realities that have always been the realities that sometimes the duties and responsibilities of citizenship have costs in time, costs in effort. My hope is to reframe the discussion, the debate, so that it becomes something more patriotic, that it's not necessarily a burden, that it's actually an opportunity and an invitation to be part of the community.
Tom Shields, I invited you in today because of what you do to make it a life-transforming or an edifying experience outside of the actual courtroom. What do you do? You have a whole, it's like, you know, welcome week at college or something.
Everybody that reports in as a juror is a taxpayer. We have a funding source, that's the taxpayer. So the chance to get them involved to the point where they gain an education of a trial court that they support, to me, that's extremely important. So they meet as many elected officers and officials as I can get into that room. Now, one thing I want to make perfectly clear, this is not a political type of situation. They come in to give the jurors information on what the jurors are actually paying to support. So, you know, and Judge Green, our administrative judge, is very much behind this. So are the judges of the municipal court. The tours of the statehouse. I'm shocked how many people have lived in Columbus all their life, never seen their own statehouse. The Supreme Court, since it moved to its new location on 65 South Front, is an incredibly beautiful building. Those are the comments I hear back. So they understand they can get an RSS feed. They become familiar with the appellate court's top of the state. They've seen their state house. If they want to, they can take a tour of the jail. Now, that's after they're all finished. No more trials. You know, common sense rules there. But they can engage in as much as they want to, including the second afternoon. I bring them to my office and give them a software demo. We show them the Marsalia generator. We still have people out there that think we use multiple sets of dice to pull off random. We're using a generator that is considered top-notch. So they get to watch this up front. The idea behind all this is they take that information back to the people I can't get to.
And that's just as a comment, that's an incredibly not only important innovation that I hope more courts adopt, but also goes back to sort of the reason why jury service was put into the Constitution and part of America was the hope was that there would be this moment where citizens would come into jury duty and there'd be a mixture of educated and uneducated jurors, and that jurors would learn the law, they'd learn the constitutional structure, and then they'd go back into their communities and relay that information. It was this teaching moment. It was Alexis de Tocqueville's idea that juries were a public school ever open for their citizenry. And what Mr. Shields is talking about is wonderful because it's doing exactly that. So when people leave jury service, which might be their only connection, one hopes, with the criminal justice system, the civil justice system, they go back into the community and they can share the value and values of it to their peers and to the next person in their family who gets summoned.
Tom, you do a survey of the jurors throughout the year, and you ask them whether or not they feel their service has been a waste of time. Mm-hmm. And 96% say no.
Right. Look at the second page. When we ask them what they feel about whether they'd like to serve 1 or 2 or 3 weeks, we have 12.5% that want us to kick it up to 3 weeks. How do you explain that unless it's a good tour? And I appreciate
good tour of duty.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the statement that was made, the education to me is primary. I also want to point out that cannot be done in a one-day, one-trial system. They have to be there long enough to get the education. So when we get figures coming back to us like this where we have 40, 50, 60% of these folks that are saying, you know, if you want to add another week to it, that's fine with me. That's what I'd like people to know before they come in.
We are looking for folks out there who didn't want to serve on a jury. Give us a call and tell us why. Tell us how you tried to get out of it. 614-292-8513. Or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Check out our Facebook page, too. That's an easy way to post a question or comment. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Bay State Republicans look for somebody to run for Senate after Scott Brown and Tag Romney nixed the idea. Jersey's Bob Menendez says he's being smeared. New Yorkers remember Ed Koch, and Hillary Clinton leaves big shoes to fill at the State Department. I'm Neil Cunningham, political junkie Ken Rudin returns, plus Hank Stuver on the Americans and rooting for the bad guys. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And Talk of the Nation is this afternoon from 2 to 4 on 89.7 NPR News. And stay right here in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock. It's Wellness Wednesday. When students are mentally ill, are colleges and universities working with them or against them? That discussion and more from 11 till noon today. And it's 30 degrees with a mix of sun and clouds, a high near 32 today, partly cloudy tonight, a low of 20, partly sunny and a high of 43 on Thursday. Support comes from OSU's Museum of Biological Diversity, a research museum that opens its doors to the public once a year. Hands-on activities for all ages, live animals, tours, demos, and more. Saturday, February 9th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Museum of Biological Diversity, 1315 Kinnear Road. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're talking about jury duty and the importance of jury duty. My guests, Andrew Guthrie Ferguson. He's written a new book. It's called Why Jury Duty Matters. Andrew teaches law at the University of the District of Columbia. And also with us is Tom Shields. He is jury commissioner for the Franklin County Municipal Court. We'd like to hear from our listeners. Have you tried to get on a jury? Have you tried to avoid jury duty? Give us a call and tell us how. 614-292-8513. Many are called in a way, Andrew, but few are chosen in the final analysis, right?
That's true. Obviously, in order to have a jury of 12 or 8 in criminal or civil cases, you need to have a broad group of potential jurors to serve. And one of the important forgotten things is that the right to serve on a jury, the potential right, was one of the fought rights through suffrage, through Reconstruction, through the founding, that it wasn't just the people who actually sit and decide, but it was the potential to sit, to be in that big, vast group, that voir dire. That's where many of the real battles for civil rights and women's rights were fought. It wasn't always, because no one's ever said that you have a right to a particular jury, but you did have a right to a representative jury panel. And so the potentiality of jury service, of showing up and being part of that vast group, was really where the source of the constitutional rights come from.
I guess then we always talk about a jury of our peers, but I don't know exactly what peer means anymore when we talk about it in terms of jury duty. Tom Shields, right? I mean, the semantics are kind of messed up.
It's not in your federal constitution. You know, when you drill down, yes, if you bring in a group, you're hoping that some peer to the defendant shows up.
Someone who can relate to me.
Exactly. But you don't go out in search of peers to each defendant. Think about it, Ann. If I have 80 possible trials a day and the 16th case decides to go to trial, how do I find peers for that defendant? So it's not the way it works. It might be a side result of doing a correct style of summonsing and using the right generator. But it's the idea of getting the pool in there to be sampled. And to the best of my recall, I believe nationally the percentage of people that are actually sworn on cases, no matter how many are summoned, is approximately 30%. I'm hoping Andrew can verify that.
Andrew?
Just in terms of the stark numbers, this again comes from the National Center for State Courts numbers. They said about 30 million summonses go out across the country for a year, and yet there are only about 1.5 million impaneled jurors. So you can imagine that is a big difference between the people who get the invitation in the mail to come down to their local courthouse and the people who sit through an actual trial to judgment, or even maybe not even to judgment, just that they've been impaneled. But it's necessary, and that's what I want people to recognize, that the system doesn't work unless you have all those people willing to come spend their 2 weeks for the potential of serving, even if they don't actually serve.
Tom Shields, you gave me some statistical breakdown of your juror summoning yield, and the number of jurors that failed to appear were zero, and only 3% of those that were scheduled failed to appear. Is that good? Is that typical from what you know of the system?
If you're asking me, I think it's great.
Okay.
The 3.01% failure to appear rate, I think a lot of that is due to the education that has, you know, it's wrapped itself full circle now. People are coming in because they heard. There's a lot to be said for that, but it's only one way of keeping your statistics looking good. You have to run efficiently. You have to get people out of the courthouse as quickly as possible. You have to accommodate things like medical appointments, childcare issues, elderly parents. All that is part of the program that Debbie and I manage together. Debbie is the deputy commissioner. We take into account each and every individual. So whatever we need to do, we do.
But of those that show up, mm-hmm. 30 to 40%, you told me, try to get out of it.
Right. Before they show up.
Right.
Right. They get the summons. They make a call.
Kelly and Powell, you're on the air. You have tried to get out of jury duty. Tell us why.
Hi, this is Kelly. I had an infant, a toddler, and three preschoolers, and my husband was on military deployment, and I was called in. There just wasn't a possibility for me to do that. And I must say that the courts were very, very accommodating, but it took a physical visit to the courthouse with all five children to make them see that I wasn't sure where I was going to put them while I was serving. And they were very, very accommodating, and I did eventually end up serving a few years later. But it truly, at that point, they were not going to let me out of it with a phone call, no matter what I told them. I mean, I said, nursing baby, preschooler, three preschoolers, a toddler, and we had triplets, and one 20 months later. And
you
one
could get it on the insanity alone.
Well, you know what? I'm going to take that now because we have five teenagers.
Okay.
I'm going to say
noted.
That was easier.
Tom Shields, would you make somebody come in?
No, my God, absolutely not. First of all, a caller, may I ask what county you were summoned to?
It was Delaware.
Okay, that's a different setup, different design. If you make that call, first of all, we have nursing mothers that report in. We provide private areas for them as well. That's a recent issue that we've run into. But anytime a person calls and indicates that they have toddlers or teenagers, as you've stated, number one, I offer them a two-week break from that responsibility. If they can't handle that, then I obviously understand. They write me a letter, indicate what the issues are, their excuse from duty, child care, part of statute.
All right. Kelly, thanks for your call. Dorothy in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, Dorothy.
I was summoned for grand jury duty. This was back in the 80s, and I worked for a large financial institution, and I was the only person in the office. So my boss said to me, not a problem. You're not going to have to go. I'm going to write a letter, and I'm going to tell them just how important it is, you know, that you be here. And especially a financial institution, they're not going to want you anyway, because if it's money matters, you could be considered biased. I took this big letter in. I walked in like, oh, I'm going to be here 15 minutes. The judge sat there. He looked it over. He considered, and he said, you go back and tell your boss that everybody's got problems. You're serving. And it was the grand jury, and it was great. I couldn't believe. You know, I was fairly new to Columbus, and boy, was it an introduction for me. I've served three different times, once on the grand jury, another time here just recently in Common Pleas, and also in Florida. And I don't have a problem with it at all. I find it very interesting.
Andrew Ferguson, that's kind of interesting that her boss was making the qualitative judgment that she wouldn't be helpful anyways because of what she did for a living.
You know, perhaps a bit of wishful thinking, but perhaps not inaccurate. There may be certain concerns in a grand jury, depending on the type of case. If there was a bunch of financial investigations going, that could be an issue. But one of the nice things about that story is its positive nature. I mean, one of the things I think that's missing, you know, why do people want to get out of jury duty, is because there's not enough positive jury stories out there. There's no place in the normal legal system for jurors like your caller to report about why it was interesting, why it was exciting, what she learned. And because of that, many of the voices of people who had really wonderful, positive experiences get lost. And I think that it would be incumbent on us and maybe on juror administrators to start collecting those voices, because I think it's the best advertising you can do to show that people can have really positive experiences and learn something different about their community, about their community members, the people who they're with. And it can be a tremendously positive, meaningful personal experience.
Tom Shields, as jury commissioner for the Franklin County Municipal Court, when people have remarked that it's when that 88% says that their impression of the jury system is more favorable than it was before they started, what do you hear from them about why that is?
Well, mainly it's because they came in expecting one thing and they saw another. The vast majority of folks, I think, that report in, and first of all, indicate that because of the generator that we use, the random generator, our first day pools are normally 92% to 93% brand first timers. So that load's being pushed through the community, which is a very good thing. They come in with full of rumors. You know, they've talked to the wrong people. They've talked to people that haven't necessarily told them the complete truth, you know, like the person that they know. And, oh, I got one of those. I just threw it away and nobody ever called me. Well, that's not quite true. So we try to dispel that rumor mill right away. We pass out information to them. It's in their chairs. They see the tours. They see all the things that they're going to be able to do during the time frame. We discuss with them the problems that they may have while they're there. So we're trying to get them off the track of the old rumor and on what actually happens. Normally that takes about a day.
Dorothy, thanks a lot for your call. We appreciate it. We have an email from Heather in Columbus. She says, I was summoned when I was in my early 20s. I really wanted to do it, but they were only paying $12 a day. That was a fraction of what my job was paying me, and I did not have a roommate, spouse, et cetera, to make up the shortfall in my pay. I went to Human Resources, and they sent a letter to the court stating it would be a hardship for me. It makes me sad because I really wanted to do it, and I hope I am called again now that I have a partner to help cover the bills. Please ask your guest if there's anything I can do to increase my chances of getting picked. Interesting question. Tom Shields?
No, there's no.
It's the luck of the draw.
Right, right. And the data in Franklin County, our population is about 1,160,000, and there's roughly 855,000 people that are eligible to do this via voter registration. When she indicated there was a $12 per diem, that tells me that was quite some time ago because the per diem is now 20. But, you know, cover parking. That's all it's meant to do.
Okay.
So
it's not meant to replace
no.
Wages.
That's why people can be excused for loss of wages.
Eric in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You're a retired police officer.
Yes. Good morning. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I was a police officer in Aurora, Colorado, and as an investigator, I sat at the prosecution side and helped with the jury selection process, and I got to see that end of it and see how people try to make excuses to get out of the jury. And myself, as a police officer, I was able to get out of jury selection a number of times by just making a phone call. Once I retired, I actually wanted to be on the jury and found out that it's a lot harder than I thought it was sitting on the other end. And while I sat there in the room waiting with everyone else, I heard many different excuses and things that people were going to say, how they dressed, how they were going to act as a way to get out of the jury. And I just want to say that I think if people give it a chance, they would realize that it's a very interesting process. If they can manage the time, I would say definitely give it a shot. I've never been able to sit on a jury, and I've been called maybe 6 or 7 times in my lifetime. So,
Tom Shields?
There's been a couple of statements, and I appreciate what you're saying, Eric, that we need to get information out to people. That is so true. The book, Why Jury Duty is Important Now, it's always been important. We need to speak to our folks that work in media, like what we're doing right now. It is extremely hard to get any information to a local news station or in print because basically I've been told numerous times it's just not newsworthy. Well, it is newsworthy. It depends on what the motivation is, and the motivation is to help more people serve, to keep that system pure. So a big key to this is how media looks at jury. I was shocked to be invited to speak because most of the time I don't get these types of invitations.
Today?
Right.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, sure.
As someone who's trying to promote a book on jury duty and who is trying to get people to rethink their relationship with jury duty, I can second the difficulty of getting media interested, with the exception here, in part because people's gut instinct is, this is something we dread. Why do we want to talk about it? And my pitch to them is, you know, instead of thinking about jury duty as a something to dread, think about it as constitution duty. It's the one day in your life you have to be a constitutional actor. It's a one day. You don't have to vote. You don't have to make enough money to pay taxes. But you do, when summoned, have to show up to be a juror. And you should take that opportunity and start thinking about why it matters. Why is the right to a jury trial, criminal jury trial, the only right that makes it both in the text of the Constitution and then again in the Bill of Rights? And if you think about the Bill of Rights, you have the 7th Amendment right to a civil jury, the 5th Amendment right to a grand jury, the 6th Amendment right to a criminal jury. If you understand how the 1st Amendment, prior restraints, and the 4th Amendment, unreasonable searches, were effectuated at the time of founding, they were done through juries. So half the Bill of Rights was about juries. It's in the Declaration of Independence, of one of the grievances of against the king, is that the lack of jury trials. How many people know that? No one knows that. And yet, we forget when we think about it in the modern era because we have this dread. And so the point of the book, of writing the book, is to recapture it as a patriotic thing. Your caller, who's a police officer, is right. He saw it firsthand, and he now understands why this can be educational, it can be valuable, and it can actually be personally meaningful.
As for painful, wait till I have a show about kidney stones. Eric, thanks a lot for your call. I want to get another email in. This one's from Mayor in Dublin. Three of my brothers had just died within the past 6 months, so I begged not to serve. I was still in exhaustive mourning. They made me come all the way into the courthouse in Newark, New Jersey, and sit in the back of all the called possible jurors. It was so painful to sit there and hear all the stories. They all paled in comparison to mine. I have always wanted to serve on a jury and have only once and considered it a very worthwhile experience, but not at that time in my life. I was finally excused, but why put me through that? Tom Shields, any thoughts about how you would have responded in a case like that?
Well, hoping that the individual, now I don't know about the New Jersey trial system, but if that individual made a call to the court and indicated these things over the phone, my opinion would be is you would never ask that person to report in. They're dealing with enough. There are ways to verify that without putting somebody, you know, through the hoops. And I think compassion is something that our offices, that's not an option. You have to be compassionate with the people that you talk to. You are going to get a very minute percentage of people that just outright lie to you, but it's still worth the compassion.
One time when I was called to jury duty, and no one's mentioned this, but it felt like a cattle call. And I was wondering, and I know, Tom, you've worked hard to eliminate that impression. Andrew Ferguson, is there a sense about that where you're just a number?
I think that part of that is all about orientation, right? So as a juror, you don't know why you're sitting in this group. You don't know what's happening. And in fact, there's a rather sophisticated ordering system that's happening that is being done every single day where your number is being, you know, put in a list that's going to go to different judges who need, as we mentioned, there would be 100 trials on a day. And the problem is, and maybe not in Mr. Shields' courthouse, but in other courthouses, is that information isn't conveyed to the juror sitting there. So from their perspective, they don't know what's happening. I think that's just about information, about orientation. Even some of the real personal questions that happen in voir dire are there for a reason. They're there to ensure a fair jury panel, a fair jury trial. And if jurors understood why these questions are being asked or why these mechanisms are being put in place, I think they'd have a better reaction to what's happening. I think part of it's just, you know, it's not ignorance in any real way. It's that we just haven't reached out to educate jurors about what's going to happen, why it's going to happen this way. And my, you know, spin on it is why this is all directly connected to the United States Constitution.
Kind of a, like, what to expect when you're expecting for jurors.
Exactly. And you know, my book actually walks you through the experience of being a juror, from the initial summons in the mail that says, dear citizen, to sitting in that big room wondering what's going to happen, to what happens in voir dire, why do we have this system, to deliberations, to verdict, all of it. And it sort of walks you through to get those lessons out there so that people will have a new understanding about why we have this system and why it's important.
Well, Andrew Ferguson, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Andrew Guthrie Ferguson, he's the author of Why Jury Duty Matters, A Citizen's Guide to Constitutional Action. Also, Tom Shields, Jury Commissioner for the Franklin County Municipal Court. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.